welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show tonight dealing with, well, you name it, but it's spirituality and metaphysics and science and other related and sometimes not related subjects. I thought that tonight it would be good to say or talk about what's good about God. And that's both a period and a question mark. So for some of you, it may be a question mark, or for some of you, it may be a period. And that's why this is a show that has an open mind. So let me begin by making this statement, which I think is important. And that is my leanings and beyond that, my full understanding, belief system, etc., is that there is a creator of our universe. You can call it God. You can call it anything you prefer. And this creator has a vast plan, which I've already talked about in the last few weeks. And it has within itself the embodiment of what I would call goodness, because goodness actually does come from the word God, in case you didn't know that. But besides that, the reason that God is good is because, blank, 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 a zillion reasons, but because ultimately if God wasn't good, we wouldn't exist. And therefore there would be nobody to even determine if God was good or not. Because in order for us to exist and all life to exist, there has to be goodness to the creature being whatever you want to call it, creator, that created all that is. And if you believe there is no God, which we will certainly address tonight, then we have several, to say the least, major, major anomalies, meaning crises, in terms of trying to understand our universe, including to the very edges of what we call science today. Now, does that mean that all scientists should therefore believe in God? Well, I can tell you that not all scientists believe in God. But the scientists usually at the edges do. Edges of biology, edges of evolutionary science, edges of physics particularly, and cosmology, and cosmologists in physics. Edges of people in some other branches of physics that connect, such as the string theory, and those people who are looking presently for dark energy. All of these sciences have a common element in that they have a crisis if there is no God, because then there is no way to describe a beginning or an end. We'll get to that too. So there's a lot of things to talk about tonight. And of course, if you're listening in on the telephone, you still could call in. You may have to hang up to do that, or you may have to have a second line. And if you're listening over the internet, of course, you can call in on the telephone. But in any case, you have the options to communicate with me tonight on today's show, if you want. Again, tonight's show, and from here on in, is going to be for 2 hours. So you got me for that long, if you keep tuned in. And if you don't, well, that's okay, I guess. All right. What's good about God? Well, let's start off with some basics. By God, I mean the being that created all that is within what I call the universe, which is multidimensional, but not multi-paralleled, as some people seemingly confuse the two words. So what I'm saying is that the universe and all of its dimensional parts, beyond, far beyond, the physical that we're familiar with, was created by this being. Okay, let's start out with who created it. Who created God? And then what created that? And on and on and on. Well, I can answer that question, and I'm going to, because tonight's show is long enough for me to give you the answer. The answer is not that complicated, surprisingly, but it's deep. Okay, it's not complicated, but it's deep. You got to think. Got to think real hard with it and follow what I'm going to try to suggest to you. I'm suggesting something called, in the world of physics now, quantum field theory. Okay, and some people don't even know what that is. Even physicists don't know what that is. Some of them don't. Okay, what is quantum field theory? It just says, basically, that within any system, there is a field that affects the system by all of its contained parts. The contained parts could be infinite parts, which is okay in quantum field theory. But all of the contained parts have an effect on the collection of the contained parts. They are not sole and separate and isolated because they are within whatever you want to call their field. You can name it something or you can leave it unnamed. It doesn't have to have a name. And let's start with the field that I'm going to describe now as an infinite field of all the parts that could ever exist within our universe, and possibly a vast number, if not all, other universes. So this is like, we'll call it, for all intents and purposes, an infinite field. Some people might object to that because they said, well, they might say, well, isn't there the possibility that there's some universe out there that this field of everything that can ever exist wouldn't pertain to? And yet it could still be the field that our creator or God came from. I will permit that for today's discussion because it doesn't exactly matter. As long as we have an infinite field in relationship to the creator of our universe, and it had infinite possibilities, then how did it come into existence? Well, in this infinite field, some of the, we'll call it, parts of it decide to become related. You say, what do you mean they decide? Well, they literally make a choice. The choice is, hey, I like that part over there more than this part. It's more like me, you know, whatever me is. And so there is a subfield that's developed within the infinite field. The subfield is, we can call it, a field of common choice. And in some cases, these common choices come together to share the same direction of their choices. So in other words, the direction of choices is that the next one they're going to make, and then one after that, and one after that, and one after that, is going to be more consistently similar than dissimilar. That's called the directions of the choices. So one thing is a choice, and the second thing is a direction. You put them together, and that ends up being something we're very familiar with, called thought. So all of a sudden, some subsection of an infinite amount of possibilities becomes a probability because it has thought, and it's self-created. The thought itself is self-created by the choices and the direction of the choices, which mean future choices, of some subset of the infinite possibilities. That group now could be called a director to the field, because there's a direction to the whole subfield, and so it's like directing itself in some ways different from the entire field of infinite possibilities. I told you this was deep. It's deep. It really isn't complicated. It's just very, very deep. It's hard to follow. The good news is you can re-listen to this, or you could read Life's Hidden Meaning, Chapter 2, because that chapter explains this in greater detail. Okay. So now we've got something that is actually directing itself in comparison to the randomness of the infinite field. It's no longer a random, chaotic field. It has chosen to have a direction, and the two together means it's a thinking being. Literally, you could say that as it thinks, it is. You see. So its thought is its creative element. Now, you might say, okay, so it's a director of this huge infinite field. What does that mean, and is that God? Not yet. Because we have a stage here, we are not all directors of their subfield within an infinite field of possibilities, is going to then make the choice to be a creator of a new field, a totally new field that we call our universe or a universe. It has to make that choice. If it chooses that, that means it wants to become something different. It's the only way to describe it, because this new universe is going to have to be something different than where it is, or it wouldn't be different. Now, once the director of the subfield says, hey, I want to have something great going on that's different than what's going on here, because this is just all me, then it becomes, instead of a director, a creator, or another word for creator, it's God. So it makes itself into a God, if you followed what everything I just said. And I agree, it's a mind bender. Why? Because the concepts that created God are the largest concepts we can probably think in as human beings. So this is a big, big, big concept to think of it as incorporating everything. But it's not as complicated as a vast number of other concepts are. It's just that it's big. Okay, so God created itself. Now, once God did that, and it said, gee, I'm God now because I created the universe, it starts to think about how it wants this universe to be of interest and to grow itself, even though it is the biggest thing in the universe. As a matter of fact, it's the only thing in the universe at that point. But how does it grow? And it comes up with a unique idea. I love this idea. And it's the first goodness of God that can really clearly be seen. Are you ready for it? It says, in order for there to be something that will help me as God to grow, and that I would enjoy its growth as well, it has to be free. It has to be able to think eventually, as I, in a much greater way, think. And it has to be able to either share in growing with me or choose to not, because it's free. And it needs to be something so special that I will not grow tired of this amazing new growth. It'll have to become so widespread, so enormous, so prolific on its own, that it will need to have pieces of me in order to do this. But again, those pieces of me, I give it the choice to either recognize or ignore. And what is it that it created eventually? Life. But in order for there to be life, we start from non-life. Because life, like God, has to grow itself. It has to come from the chaos, from the complete and almost total lack of choice and direction. It comes from a state of non-life, and it creates itself as God did. It creates a subfield within the pre-life or non-life field. And within that subfield, it creates choices. It creates direction to the choices, which is consistency in the will of it. And eventually, it develops consciousness. This is an amazing thing. And you might say, but how do I know this? How do you know that? How do you know that to be true? Come up with a different system. Come up with one that works as good or better, or even half as good, that you can really explain the universe in. You can say, oh, what about Darwin? Wasn't Darwin into a system that didn't have to have God in it and all this stuff? Well, if you know anything about Charles Darwin, you would know that's not true. As a person, if you know anything about his theories, and if you know the most recent and semi-recent activities, experiments, you would know that the only explanation for evolution is to incorporate God. Because you have all kinds of anomalies. Those crises I talked about earlier at the beginning of the show. In evolution, when you try to get rid of God, it doesn't work fast enough. About five times or so too slow. There are serious, serious questions that are unanswerable in terms of how consciousness exists and what it is and how it seems to march onward to its own future development. Because if you're only dealing with survival of the fittest, consciousness is not always a benefit. As a matter of fact, in some circumstances, you could devise an evolutionary system in which consciousness, as just a means of survival, is not necessarily a positive factor, depending, again, on where you slice the evolutionary cookie. Now, here's an important element to think about. If we can't get rid of God without having serious anomalies, there's a lot more to talk about in evolution. I'll just see if I can cover some of those things tonight. That's like a whole show and a half or something. But if we can't even do that, I can guarantee when you get to physics and biochemistry and other parts of science, you really, really, really better have God, because you're going to end up with all kinds of issues. And the simplest answer, the simplest question to destroy any of those issues is, what happened before that? Just ask that question to any scientist who doesn't believe in God and watch them squirm. What happened before that? Nobody knows. Oh, but I know, because I listen to Why Like This. And the guy on that show explained how things begin. Okay. I know. I'm just teasing. All right, let's move on. So, God is this being that is self-created, and decides to, it wants to grow by other beings, almost an infinite, but not quite really infinite, but very, very large number of other beings also being self-created and also participating with God. What a cool idea. What a good idea. Is God good? Well, if that isn't good, I don't know what is. If goodness has anything to do with givingness, God limits itself in this process so that life can grow. How does it limit itself? Well, very simple. It allows the choices, the most of the choices, like 99.99999% of all the choices, are made by the life that it has been the original creator of. Now you could say, well, why is there some choices that life can't make? Well, because they're beyond the capability of life to make. So God makes those choices and then backs off as life grows. So as we enable ourselves, we, and I say we being life, as life enables itself, it has to obey less and less the choices of God. Let's take an example of that. Since we have some the luxury of time, I love this, we can actually exemplify what I'm saying. Let's look at human beings. How many choices did human beings have, say, 5,000 years ago? How many did they have? 3, or 2, or 1? Have our choices gone up and our limitations gone down as we become greater in consciousness, greater in overall intelligent actions, and more capable of thinking at higher levels? You see, this is God's gift. This is God. This is the way God said, wow, I've got a great idea. As the life that I start enables itself, it doesn't have to listen to choices that I have to make to, in the beginning to, so it can exist. But those choices become superseded by its own. What a terrific system. So when we complain that God isn't good because bad things are happening, those things are happening because God has made some choices. We don't recognize those choices. We go and make our own that are contrary to good, to the goodness of God. And then bad things happen, which God doesn't stop from happening because it allows us to make our own choices. That makes some sense? I hope so. Because a lot of people say, oh, well, there's no God because there's evil and darkness and terrible things that happen. And if there was a God, why would it permit such things? Because God is a lot wiser than those folks are. You see, if there's confusion, it lies in us, not in God. And it doesn't prove that there is no God. It proves that there is a God of great, great wisdom and love. It proves it because that is the way the universe works. If it was truly random, then it wouldn't matter about anything, and there would be no kind of order, even the order we dislike. Because people usually dislike the order that has prevailing in it the goodness of God, because their anti-goodness comes to haunt them. Not right away. Sometimes you have a lifetime of wonder. But it inevitably will come back, unless they do something to change it. Remember, we have the choice to even avoid, we'll call it the karma of our even deep past or even recent past. If we want to, we don't have to live in fear, even of our own errors and misjudgments, even of our non-goodness, because we can change. And we can change before some significantly bad things happen, maybe not avoiding everything, but probably doing a pretty good job, as long as we are on our toes and willing to do it for reasons outside of just avoiding the unpleasantness. Otherwise, if you only do it to avoid the unpleasantness, you have a paradox. Because the selfishness of your own thinking and being concerned only about yourself and the outcomes of prior selfishness will bring on worse results. Can you see that? God is selfless in its creations. If we are not, we are going against God's choices, and you know that never has a good outcome. as long as you keep sticking with those choices. You can change them, and you'll get better results, which is the good news, I guess. All right, what else is good about God? Because we're starting with some basic stuff here, and hopefully this is making some sense to you. I hope so. I hope so. Well, God is a free thinking and free creating being. So it allows tremendous freedom in all that it creates. So much so that we sometimes don't like that. Well, why doesn't God take care of them? Why doesn't God stop these bad things from happening? Well, because you can't have freedom and have that at the same time. Take your pick. God's already chosen its side. Freedom. What does freedom really mean? What is the foundation of freedom? The foundation of freedom is the ability to create. If you lose freedom, you lose your ability to create. And who is God? God is the creator. As you lose your own personal ability to create, you lose your perspective, understanding, and vision of God. Any system, economic, political, you name it, that destroys creativity or limits creativity is anti-God. You've heard me talk about tyranny and socialism, Marxism, which is a form of socialism, and Marxist communist type of thinking, and Maoists. There's a whole bunch of this. And all of those methods are anti-God. The people behind those methods are people who truly do not believe in God. Not really. They pretend to, sometimes for their own political reasons, but they don't believe in God because they don't get it. They don't understand God. People who understand God realize that when you destroy creativity through limiting it in various ways, by limiting people's freedom, the results are disastrous. You are moving quickly to the dark side. You may be evil already or are becoming evil. You're fostering it. And you're absolutely against goodness. No question about it. People who do that usually lie and trying to pretend like the things they are doing are good. You're doing it for all the people who are disadvantaged. There is no greater disadvantage than to remove freedom and creativity from someone through tyranny. Nothing could be worse. So God is free. God seeks there to be freedom. Anything that promotes something opposite of that is anti-God, regardless of its claims, regardless of what it pretends to be. It is anti-God. How important is it for us to understand that? Well, pretty much very important, because the dark side wants us not to know that, wants us not to recognize it, so it can enslave us. Really? Why am I so big about that? Because if you're going to be like I am, the people in the spiritual group I'm a member of, fighting some types of evil that presents itself usually to us, if you're going to do that, you have to know exactly what it's all about. Otherwise, you'll lose. So you need to recognize the first thing it goes after is freedom and creativity. It tries to stop you from creating. You say, well, creation could be bad, couldn't it? Yeah, you can create bad. That's true. However, creation, good or bad, has to be available And people have to have the freedom to choose, or there's no room for God. We'll get to some of the specifics about that in a little while. But I'm just talking about the generalities right now. Okay, what else? What else is so important to understand about God's goodness? Well, everybody that I know of talks about how important it is to have knowledge. Well, you need knowledge. Knowledge is okay. Knowledge is only good, though, when it is communicated to others in an intelligent way, which requires what is also sometimes referred to as wisdom. Wisdom is the knowledge that we acquire through our senses applied to the goodness or with the goodness of God. Wisdom allows us to help other people to be intelligent in their coordinated responses to us in the physical world where we live, and vice versa. It allows us to conserve energy. It allows us to make, we'll say, some degree of organization out of disorder and chaos. It allows us to take that order and make it into something beautiful. It does all those things if we have wisdom with knowledge. And the knowledge has to be given, that means. Part of wisdom is always giving knowledge to others in an expanded way, so that they can respond in the same way. It constantly is in movement. And it has a direction to be of help to those who can most use it. Giving knowledge to the ignorant is not only wasteful, it's dangerous. Someone who has shown themselves to misuse knowledge, you don't want to give them. You want to keep it from them until they have shown responsibility in its use. You want to give it to those people who show the responsibility. Just giving knowledge randomly to people almost always ends up in it not being used in an intelligent way that is helpful and giving towards others. It makes people more selfish. So the idea that knowledge is great, not true. Knowledge is power? Well, it could be. As a matter of fact, evil uses knowledge in that negative way all the time. And evil seeks power. But power is not the end of what God is about. Goodness does not end up always being powerful. Goodness could be powerful, provided it is first and most given in ways that produces intelligent, coordinated responses and helps others to do that as much as it helps the one in giving. Does this make sense to you? I hope so. This is how God functions. If you want to function differently, you are free to do so. The interesting thing is those who choose to function away from God inevitably cut down their creativity, destroy their consciousness, and become afflicted with many problems, and also caught up by even darker and more evil people than they are. If that isn't a terrible outcome, I don't know what could be. That's the general way it goes for those who reject God. Now you might say, well, how do I know if I'm rejecting God or not if I'm so free to choose? How do I know for sure that it isn't good to do what I'm doing or vice versa? Well, the good news is that God, especially with human beings, has built in our own sense of goodness. That sense comes from two centers called the heart and crown chakras, and each one contributes a different way of reflecting or understanding the goodness of God. One is just simply and literally whether there is goodness in whatever we are experiencing. So if we sense goodness, the heart chakra tells us, and boy, we can feel it. We say, oh, I can feel the goodness. It helps us to think as well, because it's real information that can be created into knowledge in our different bodies, especially our manasic or mental body. And we can then think about whether something is good or not through the sense of it in both our, well, in all three of the physical, astral, and mental bodies. We can sense it in some different ways and determine whether or not this is goodness. That's what the heart chakra does. But the head chakra or crown chakra does a lot more. Let me describe. The head chakra not only tells us if something is good or not, because that's okay. I mean, that's cool. If it's good, hey, it's good. But it tells us whether or not we are on the right track in our creation, further creation of goodness, and whether we and others are capable of using the knowledge we give them, capable of using the love we give them, capable of anything, and whether we are doing the same. It tells us about our creation further of goodness with our Creator, with God. It not only says, well, it's good or bad, it tells us how we can do more and whether the more we are doing is going in the right direction. That's a real important sense to have. That sense is the most difficult sense for a human being to develop. Some humans know the difference between goodness and not goodness, but they're not good because usually they are afraid of co-creating with God goodness. So their crown chakra is kind of, the consciousness part of it is not working very well. So they're not as aware as they could be of how to create, and when they are creating, if it's the right kind of creation. And this is one of the issues that is so important to be, we'll say, massaged or grown in humans. The best way to grow it is to allow more freedom. As you curtail freedom, be it through government, religion, economics, it doesn't really matter. As you curtail it, what happens to that person is that they become more and more anemic in their ability to create goodness. And they become further and more distant from God. See how this all fits together? I hope you do. These are real important ideas. Ideas that I think probably make the greatest difference in terms of how the universe really functions and how we can make a gigantic difference in improving the entire system, you might say. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, okay, so this guy's saying this or saying that. But how do I know it's true? Well, this is one of the greatest things about what I'm talking about tonight. It's all testable. You can test it yourself. Try it for a week. All you got to do is some of the things that I'm talking about, like be more creative with goodness, try to understand goodness, recognize there is a God. Try it for a week. See if it doesn't change everything about who you are. But you have to be diligent in doing it. Don't just do it once a day and say, well, I did it for 5 minutes, so that's good. No. This is something you, when I say for a week, I'm saying really you go after it every day and you do your very best to be creative in this way. It will change your life. It will. Now, you got to go overcome your fears. Oh, but how am I going to make a living if I do it? No, that's nonsense. Just nonsense. Everything about your life will actually improve. But you may not be so convinced about that. I know. This is a difficult thing. It's very difficult for a lot of people to kind of buy into. Well, listen, we're going to go to break right now. I'll try to give you all a little bit of a breather, so to speak. And when we come back, I'll go into some more detail and some more interesting ideas about what's good about God. So we'll be back, give or take, in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Back, and this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about what's good about God. I like that subject. And you notice we have both periods and a question mark for those of you with different thoughts about that. Let me continue, because I think this is probably an important subject in general. What about faith? I want to kind of diverge here for a little bit, because we kind of went into science and we're talking about creation and all that. And those are all good things, but they're one side of the Creator. What about faith? And where does faith fit into this general equation? Well, let's go back to some of the things I said earlier in the show. This is also maybe helpful for people who are just tuning in. You never know on a two-hour show where people are really coming in. But at any rate, if you recall, I said earlier that in God's plan, basically, God has to make some choices for all of life, because life is not capable at its various levels of making all the choices. As we become more capable and more responsible in making our choices, then The choices that God made become new opportunities for us to grow and to co-create with God, and not limitations on us. That's a great system. But within that whole concept, if we think about how I presented it, there has to be, at virtually every stage, especially among human beings, because of our pretty strong limitations, we're far less limited than anything below us in the kingdoms, such as animals. But we're way more limited than even the next, very next kingdom ahead of us. Some people call it the kingdom of souls. Some people refer to it as a kingdom of ascended beings. Sometimes they call them masters. It doesn't really matter what you want to call them. They're way ahead of us. We're as much more ahead of us in comparison to us than we are in comparison to some fairly advanced animals below us. So that gives you an idea how far ahead of us they are. And someday, maybe next week possibly, I'll have a show on just describing what their life is like. A lot of people have asked me that, but it's just a little complicated to try to do in anything less than like a couple hours, which we now have, which is terrific. Okay, so where does faith enter into this situation? Well, because human beings are constantly faced with the universe around them, in which God is making some big choices that human beings are incapable of making at the present time. If we don't have God, faith in God, then those choices seem arbitrary and even a bit hostile, because we're doing choices in the opposite direction. And therefore, our life seems to be capriciously controlled in sometimes very negative ways in comparison to what we desire. And what does faith do? Faith is the reversal of that desire into an acceptance and a belief that the choices that we cannot at this time, we're not capable of carrying through our own creations to overcome, are being made in our best interest. That's what faith is. Faith is taking our selfish desires and switching them around to a kind of love for our own creator or God. Human beings have this capability. Most animals do not have any capability of doing that. So we have faith. Unfortunately, animals are stuck with a system in which faith is not really an option. But at the same time, they don't need that option as much, because they don't have enough consciousness to question the things that are beyond themselves. We do. And so to help compensate for this, we'll say, capability, but also lack of overall ability, faith is the answer. How does faith work? It works like this. Let's say you have, and I love this because we have the time to talk about it tonight. Let's say you have a series of desires that are contrary to the growth of God. They're contrary to goodness. I'll name some of them. You want to have free and random sexual encounters. You might say, well, what's wrong with sex? I'll get to that. You want to have some wild drug experiences. You want to have, which might include even excessive drinking or however you want to do it. You want to have a kind of sudden release of tension and pressure by destroying things that other people might own or care about. I'm just naming some random desires, sir. Just making them up. Okay. These are, I wanted to pick some things that were pretty clearly not too good. Okay. So, what do you do? Well, you take these desires, and part of the changing of the desires is a process of having faith that the things that are good in God are better choices. And it's just literally taking the feeling that you have that you want to satiate from the desire and creating a satiation of goodness by having faith that God's choices are better than your own. What do you need to have this? The first thing is humility. Those people who do not have humility will always be deficient in faith. Why is that? Well, because human beings today, unlike human beings a million years ago, are thinking, mentally thinking beings, controlled by mental thought more than astral feeling itself. So their desires, when their desires are contaminating their mental thinking, what happens is, and of course I had a show on this in a few weeks ago, but on a kama manasik thought. But what happens is you just no longer can believe that there is something out there that is more creative and more intelligent in its controlling of the things that you cannot control yourself than you are. You believe that you know better, that you're better in control of everything that you do. And so you reject faith. And once you do that, you're in big trouble. Because ultimately, no matter how intelligent you may think you are, and no matter how much you think you have of knowledge, the end of that road is disastrous. Because you're not creating more of God, you're only trying to create more of yourself. You're selfish. Egotism, and worse, arrogance, breeds this sort of selfishness, and it stamps out faith. So people who are highly egotistical, and especially if they are arrogant, have no faith, and they don't believe in God, even if they pretend to. These are usually the people, by the way, who turn out to be tyrannical and seek to control others and eventually lead a path into darkness. I hope this makes some sense to you. So how do you increase your faith? Well, interestingly, I'm going to say things that are a little contradictory to people who are probably very religious. I don't think you can increase faith by just attending some kind of church or even, now this is going to obviously bother some people, even reading various Bibles, including the New Testament or the Old Testament in Christianity or in Judaism. The reason being that those instruments are okay for people who already have faith, but they don't develop faith because it starts with changing the desires from being controlling of you to giving that control to a being who is far beyond anything we can imagine, and having faith that that being's choices in the areas where we are not able to control the choices at this point because our inabilities are there, be it because you're an alcoholic or because you're a very angry person, you want to destroy things or whatever it may be, it's still a problem for you. And you've got to have faith to get over it in reading the Bible, going to Sunday school, going to church, going to whatever, is, in my opinion, not the answer. I believe the answer is to develop humility. Now, how do you develop humility? Well, first of all, let's look at God. God has to have amazing humility, because although it makes choices for life that can't, it gives up 99.999999% of all the choices it could be making. And in order to do that, it has to have incredible humility. It says, I give all that can have the ability to do so the choice to create as they choose. It takes enormous humility to do that because God knows that all of his choices are going to be better, it thinks, or could think that way. But not better in terms of what it wants to grow, in terms of what it wants to prosper. It wants life to prosper. It wants all things to grow, not itself only. It would like itself to grow, but only as those things that are free to do so co-create with it. huge humility. If you can adopt anything close to that in your life, you will have humility. Because it's the acceptance that what's right is really the creations of others, not the creations that you make. God doesn't seek to put controls on life. It has to in order for life to even exist. But those controls are always optional and easily, or sometimes with great difficulty, overcome, depending upon the capabilities of the life form itself. Isn't this amazing? And you might say, well, what's thinking for a stone or whatever? There's things behind the scenes that are souls, group souls, that still involve thought for plants and animals, even pre-life, like elements, minerals, stones. But the point is that everything has some choices to be made. Sometimes they're very, very rudimentary, and sometimes they're very advanced, like humans have. Not nearly as advanced as those ahead of us, but still, relatively, we have some great choices we can make if we choose to. So faith becomes a really critical element. How do we get around faith? What are we going to do to make faith really something that we can develop in ourselves? Well, my suggestion is the following. I don't care if you stay in a religion or not. This is not about religion. I don't care what religion you're in. It makes no difference. This is about your relationship with God. It's about accepting that you don't know everything, that you can't be in control of everything, because your abilities to do so are limited in both your senses and the amount of illusion that you have, and that illusion is the negative side, the things that are wrong with your senses, and the lack of unity of sense that you have. So the lack of unity of sense causes a great weakness in almost everything that is sensed. With bad senses, you end up with bad information and bad, or not good, knowledge. And with not good knowledge, no matter how wise you are, there's very limited. Great limits on what you can do. So it is an interesting process. Come to those conclusions based upon inner reflection. Examine yourself. How much do I really understand? How many times do I make a mistake in a single day? Start keeping track of every mistake you make. Not to hammer yourself about the mistakes you make, not to, you know, whip yourself or something, but instead to gain humility, to gain an understanding of what you really can't be responsible for because you don't even have the sense to do it yet. Then you'll develop faith. Then you'll say, whoa, maybe it's time to start having faith that there are things much greater than I am. Now, I'll tell you a little secret. It's a lot easier sometimes to do this if you have connections or are part of a group, a spiritual group, because you can see it in others easier than yourself. Also, and that spiritual group can be a religion, but also, if you can, try to picture what even the next kingdom beyond human must be capable of. Because some of them are actually helping us. They're like demigods. They're not really God, of course. But to us, in relative form, they're the closest we're going to be able to probably directly experience, if ever, what God might be. And so that gives us some perspective. Also, there are human beings, almost always, that are more advanced than us. Those human beings can be a great help in developing faith. Because if you can see that a human being can be more advanced, so just imagine how far God is and where God is. Faith in God is not blind. Faith in God is eye-opening. It gives us light. It reverses the wrong desires that we have and the terrible amounts, which most people have these days, of egotism. And some of those have arrogance. This is the opportunity to start changing that element of your life. You don't do it, in my opinion, by becoming intimately tied to certain rituals, etc., in a religion. I believe this is an inward journey to reflect on yourself and to develop humility. If there was one thing that is the most important thing that a person can develop, I believe it's humility. And in the Bhagavad Gita, this fellow who is attempting to better himself asks his teacher. His teacher's name is Krishna. And he says, Krishna, you know, tell me how I can become a soul, how I can develop myself into something greater than a human being. And his teacher, who probably is the closest, and he didn't even know at that point that his teacher really was his teacher, he was sort of starting to realize it. But his teacher then says, there is one way that all humans can help themselves to become more soul-like, and that's by developing more humility. And it's through humility that we can develop faith, and it's through faith that we can relieve ourselves of the horrors of believing that the universe is random, chaotic, and ultimately capricious. That's a scary universe. That's a terrible universe to have to live within. And let's go on to that part of the show. Let's say there was no God. Let's say there is no God. What then are we facing? One of the things that I asked myself a long, long time ago, this was decades ago, is if there really is no God, then what is the meaning of life? And what does it mean to exist for the short period of time that we exist here? And the answers to that are pretty problematic, because you, at least I, came up with the answers that it's not even worth the time. It's not worth all the aggravation. The whole thing sounds terrible. And the finality of it is no better than misunderstanding or not having even a vague idea of what the beginning is. So, like, there's no beginning and there's no real end. The end is, well, I just die and there's nothing. Well, that's a pretty dismal life script for anybody to try to live through. And a lot of people subconsciously have made that choice. That choice leads to a very depressed kind of existence, and it definitely pulls people from being good. Why would you worry about, why would you be concerned about being good if there's no God? So God and goodness, which the word good comes from, God, just become meaningless, useless. Just some kind of opiate of the masses, as Karl Marx said 150 years ago. The opiate of the masses. Puts us to sleep, numbs us. God is nothing more than just a numbing thing. Let's forget about God. When God is really the thing that frees us to be the most creative, it allows us to rid ourselves of our desires, become faithful, and at the same time become humble so that we can truly grow. So there's really, really, really good reasons to find goodness and God. Really good. Okay, so let's switch gears now. I want to talk about some of the things that indicate that there absolutely cannot be any question that God exists. Or shall we go on? Okay. And I believe I'll give you another break. I'll probably talk about some of the things we're doing in our group, et cetera, in a little bit. So don't worry. I'm not going to burn you out here. But what else tells us that God really exists? Well, let's talk about physics for a minute. A lot of people are watching programs now like, oh, they're getting close to understanding how the universe started and all this other stuff. Well, what they don't talk about on some of the shows I've been watching, anyway, is the more esoteric parts of physics. That it's sort of a cross between metaphysics and physics, but it's part of physics these days. And that is that there is a very high likelihood there is a multidimensional universe, not a multi-parallel universe. That's another theory. A multidimensional, meaning that, as you know, there's three dimensions that we're familiar with, height, width, and depth. And those three dimensions seem to be all around us. Then a lot of people include time. They think that that's a dimension as well, and I agree. But there's actually a dimension between time and those three, which has to do with the directionality or movement of energy. Actually develops its own kind of dimension in a place called the astral dimension, which is just a bit beyond where we are right now. And there's a piece of our dimension, which is the electromagnetic part, where everything has a wave to it besides being a thing. So all things have waves, and all waves actually have a thing associated with them. And this is all part of physics. It's nothing really that's not part of physics in that last part I just described. But when you get into the extra-dimensional parts of the universe, God becomes much more apparent. The problem we have living in the physical world at the present time is we have such great limitations on dimensionality, because the three are really only one dimension when joined together. It's not enough to be able to see God very easily. How do you see God when you add a dimension? Well, I already told you, and you didn't even know it. It's that thing about changing desires into faith that allows you to see God better. Well, that's the same thing, exactly, but restructured or re-explained in physics about understanding the dimensionality of the astral world, which is that, yes, of all energy has a dimension of direction to it. So the energy moves in a specific direction, unlike in our part of the universe, where it randomly moves in different directions. So let's take a photon, like photons. Photons are little parts of, we'll call it, light. And a photon can come into existence and leave existence from our own universe. So can an electron, which a photon oftentimes comes from. And photons can randomly go all over the place, as electrons sometimes can. As a matter of fact, anything can, in our part of the universe. And you might say, well, how is that possible? Well, we already know it's possible. It's already taking place. It's just that we don't know how to explain it in physics. It's called quantum physics, and parts of quantum physics explains that these things are not only particles, but they are also waves. And waves propagate all over the place. Particles are located in a specific place. If something is both, guess what? It's everywhere at one time, in a way, and its directionality can be very confused. In the astral world, what happens is something called the quantum constant. Now, this has to do with the amount that the amplitude of the energy affects where it is. Okay, so amplitude is like a measurement of the amount of force in the wave of in the energy of a wave. And that amplitude, if you increase it, it makes the particle part of the wave become more specific. What I'm telling you is just plain old physics. This has been known about since 1900, honestly. You may not know it because you didn't take that kind of physics in school, but I'm telling you the truth. This is quantum physics. Okay, so that's and a guy named Planck, who's a German guy, he discovered this. And even mathematically figured, a very small number, mathematically figured what this is. It's really kind of neat. Well, when you go to the astral world, it's another dimension of time and space, things are a bit different. This constant, it grows by a significant amount, as much as a couple dozen times. That's a very big amount. And when that happens, the definiteness of where a particle is changes, but the direction of its waveform becomes much more defined. Now, again, this is just plain old physics. If you knew about quantum physics and you understand Planck's constant, you would know what I just said is true. Okay. Now, what does that mean then? Well, it means that a whole new dimension emerges from the astral world. Because of the change in the quantum constant, you actually develop another dimension, the time and space. It's so amazing. Like with the three that we have, now another dimension develops in which the direction of energy itself is actually a dimension. Now, let me give you an example of that to understand this better. Okay, let's say you and I were both standing in the same place in three dimensions, but the movement of our energy as directed by our thought, because energy follows thought greater than its own. Even here, that's true, but we can't see it. In the astral world, it becomes very apparent. My energy is flowing, let's call it right, and your energy is flowing left. We are standing in three dimensions in the identical same spot, but neither one of us even sees each other, because my energy is flowing in a different way than yours is, because there's a new dimension to time and space in the astral world. So it's a lot bigger place than what we're familiar with here in three dimensions. It's huge because it has this extra dimension of time and space. Wow. That makes a difference, doesn't it? Time is still not a completed dimension even where we are right now, nor is it completed in the astral world. It actually becomes a completed dimension in and of itself, separated from space, in the mental world. But here, it's only connected to space and dependent upon what the space is doing. That's a different kind of thing. We'll learn more about that another time. How does this all fit in with God? Well, you see, as you start seeing the dimensionalities increase in the different parts of our universe, God becomes more and more apparent. Love and goodness or givingness of God and everything else is much more visible when you can tell the direction of energy. When energy is moving away from something towards something else, that's a loving response. It's greatly and easily understandable when that dimension is fully visible to someone who lives in the astral world. Or the opposite, when someone is only directing all the energy towards themselves, everybody can see that. In the astral world, you can't see it here. We can sense it through a thing called empathy, which is a sense from the astral world. But it doesn't work all that well here because we don't have the full dimension of it. So we can't really tell that people are being all that selfish, as people can easily tell in the astral world. God becomes more visible in the astral world. Far more people have faith or believe in a creator or a God in the astral world than do in the physical world. Now, what I'm talking about is I'm talking about full faith. I'm not talking about like, well, go to church and everybody. I'm talking about people who really have it deep in their heart. They know that God exists and God is good because the astral world reveals it better to them. Now, it's true that some parts of the astral world aren't as good at revealing this than other parts. Some parts have very low relative levels of quantum constant change compared to the physical world because they're very dark. The selfish people, most selfish people live there, and so God is not quite as clear there as it is in the rest of the astral world. But still, you can see how this system works. And the wonderful thing about this is God designed it because, guess what? When we die from here, guess where you end up going? To the astral world. So you didn't get that God is here. You didn't have faith in God while you lived here. The chances are going up that when you go to the astral world, you will. Unless you go to the very darkest parts of it, you're going to definitely have a stronger sense of God and much more likely have faith in God of some sort than you did while you're physically alive, which means you're more spiritual. You understand God's thought to a greater level because you're experiencing this other dimensionality to the space around you. And you can see or sense God better just because of the number of dimensions. As dimensionality goes up, our sense of God goes up exponentially with it. So as we live in higher and higher dimensions, we can sense God much better. That's the grace of God. That's God's gift to us without having to do anything. All you got to do is die, and everybody's going to do that. And since we're all going to die, we're all going to experience this in some fashion, one way or another. How do you like that? I think that's neat. I hope you do, too. Let me give you a little break. I know it's been a while. I want to tell you something about what we're doing. Just to sort of fill you in. Today, we went ahead and started to make some, we'll say, pre-production capsules. We're semi-successful. We're working with new kinds of extracts that have not been produced before. Nobody knows how they're going to react together, et cetera. And the equipment that we're using is not exactly made for this new type of stuff. Literally, these are extracts of known herbs or been around for thousands of years, but they behave differently when you try to encapsulate them. And so we're having a little bit of trouble. Our biggest problem is getting as much as we would like into the capsule that we want to have people available to be able to take. If it doesn't work, we'll have some available for those who really want to experiment with it for the next few weeks. And then next month, which is coming by fast, by the middle to the end of September, we will have available tablets, which are much more convenient to take and easier. Those will be available maybe a lot of different places. So that's what went on today. We're still working on it. I'd say by Sunday, yes, we're going to work through the weekend, obviously, we may be able to say one way or another whether we can get this to work in capsule form. Remember, this is only an experiment. It's a pre-manufacturing system. And eventually, 5-Chi Jizik, which is what we're talking about, will be available in tablets. Easier to take, fewer, and just a more user-friendly product. We're trying to get there maybe too fast. We'll see. Trying to get there so we can have something available in the next week for those who want to try it. But if it isn't going to happen that way, that's okay too. We're open to however. Now we're using it, and a few people are using it to see how it, you know, works in general. And it works great in terms of although you have to take a lot of capsules. It works great in terms of what it's supposed to do, which is relieve pain. As a pain reliever, it is amazing. And each time you take a serving, which is some people call them doses, but legally it's supposed to be called servings because this is a herbal supplement. Each time you take it, it actually works better. Isn't that amazing? Compared to most pain medications, go the exact opposite, right? If you take a drug, well, the first time wasn't too bad, but then it got worse and worse. I've been using it for a week and now it's useless. This stuff is the exact opposite. Every time you take another dose or serving, it improves, lessens the pain, and improves the general results. Of course, we can't put this on the bottle, but in my opinion, it gets rid of the pain, period. It gets rid of the reasons for the pain. It helps the body to treat the pain. Kofi Chi Jizik. Yeah, it's going to be available soon. Maybe next week or maybe next month. We're not that far away. Today's the 27th of August. Certainly by the 27th of September, we'll have some available tablets. But I'm hoping that we can do better. We'll see. And if we can't, you know, then so be it. And so for those people who really want to experiment with it and don't mind the fact that I have to take who knows how many capsules in comparison to a tablet, we'll have some available for those brave people to try it out. Okay, so, and just so you know, it's all herbs. Actually, there's two nutraceuticals in there, which are very common nutraceuticals. 61 herbs, relatively common herbs. But the way they're put together, and the fact that they're special kinds of extracts, allows them to last 6 to 8 hours and to just be amazing in their ability to change the chi energy. That's why we call it Fai Chi Jizik. So that the pain itself just goes away. You don't get drugged. You don't feel like you've even taken an aspirin. You just get rid of the pain. It just goes away. Tell me that isn't something neat. Okay, so if you're further interested in that, let us know. Like I said, maybe by sometime next week, we'll have something to try. Hopefully, if we can overcome the capsule issue, we'll even have something, you know, we can just put out there immediately and let the general public try it. But we can't do it if it's not practical. Right now, it's not really that practical. Okay, let me move on now to what's good about God. Because God has come up with the most amazing system. It's so remarkable. When I first kind of figured this whole thing out, and you might say, well, how did you figure this out? Well, for those of you who haven't heard the story, I was running a mental health institute. It was kind of an experimental mental health institute. We did a lot of different things. And one of those things was we were studying consciousness, sometimes called the field of noetics. And people were going in and out of an isolation tank, a very sophisticated one that we built. We were trying to learn about consciousness. The guy that was running this was not me. And he had a PhD in noetics, which is great. I mean, that was his specialty. But because people were having experiences in which they were going to other dimensions and having a common experience, sometimes meeting the same being or person over in the astral world, that kind of like got my interest, and I started to become a believer. But this might really be something more than people just hallucinating in a dark place, you know. So I started to go in. And since I was director of the institute, I could kind of do whatever I wanted. I didn't even tell anybody what I was doing. I just went in, what the hell. And over time, I was able to perform experiments while my consciousness was existing in my astral body, in the astral space, while my physical body was in this tank where I was completely weightless and had no sense at all. When you don't have any senses, those senses just sort of shut off. Then the next series of senses, your astral ones, come on stronger, and you can actually astral travel much easier. It's a crutch. You don't have to do it that way, but it's much harder if you try to do it without it. And so I spent a lot of time examining the physics of the next dimension of time and space, but the subdimensions to it as well. I knew enough about physics so I could, with some degree of intelligence, concoct experiments while I was there to see exactly what was happening. One of the first things I discovered was that the quantum constant, which I mentioned earlier, Planck's constant, had changed. And it had changed in a significant way, producing similar kinds of results as I had read about when I was young, as if quantum constant had suddenly grown. The guy actually wrote a book about it. It was kind of interesting because this was the place I was visiting now. The same things that were described as possibilities for taking place was exactly what was happening in this other dimension of time and space. And yes, I was not a believer in God at that point. I didn't have any faith. And I became one, because it's pretty hard not to when you finally can see God around you. And that's what happened to me. It took me a couple years to formulate a good deal of the ideas that I later started to teach about and eventually write about. So this is how I came to it. And you can say, well, I'm not going to know. I don't have one of those things. How am I going to? Well, you don't have to have one of those things. You can figure all this stuff out on your own here. If you really, really want to, yes, you can spend months and of time, and eventually through various meditative techniques, we most likely will be able to astral travel. It's not good for you. You might hurt your physical senses to some extent. And you may not have the greatest experiences. Because if you're going there for just, well, I just want to have a good time, or I want to know if it's true or not, those are not the best reasons. I went not so much to know whether it was true as to eventually let others know what I was discovering. That kind of protected me, although I didn't have the greatest experiences and did damage my senses to some extent. So you should be aware that it isn't without some danger to try this. Yet all of us will eventually live there. But when we do, we won't have the physical world to come back to have to live it, which puts tremendous demands on us to have two different sets of senses become dominant within the same day. That's a quite difficult thing for our consciousness to handle and our personalities to adjust to. Okay, so that's where my understanding originated from. And that also gave me the opportunity to start trying to figure out how the rest of the universe works. And it took many years for me to do that. But once I did, right or wrong, and I think I'm right, but regardless, once I did, my understanding of God went way, way up. Because God's everywhere. I mean, you can't miss it. But you can. At least I couldn't miss it. I thought I could miss it, and I did miss it for most of my life up to that point. But after these epiphanies, I really could not mistake any longer that God existed and God was good. And I could see all the reasons why. Okay, let me go into some other ways of understanding God, and I'm going to really switch gears on you now. I'm going to go to a different field entirely. We'll call it art, but I'll call it the ability to see both patterns and understand how God, through the experience of the different elements of how everything fits together, we can experience God in sense of beauty, and we can experience God in the sense of, beyond beauty, a oneness to all things being in some way connected. This is another way to find God. You might say, well, what's beauty? Beauty is those things that tell you that God exists. So beauty is anything that you experience that tells you in some way, even if it's a very, very small way, that God exists. Something is beautiful is defined in exactly that way. How does it do it? It does it by improving the sense or senses you're using to experience it. So just experiencing whatever it is you're sensing, because it has part of God in it, automatically improves your senses, and then you experience God, and your sense becomes more accepting, more sensitive to being able to be aware of God in the future. That's what beauty does. Beauty is all around us. It's in the natural world as we experience it without any intervention or changes by humans. Also, beauty can be added to or changed by humans. Some things are beautiful that humans create, be it music or any other kind of art form. Or the natural world, it sometimes we do increase the beauty of the natural world when it is fouled up by things that are done by other human beings or sometimes just by catastrophes caused in the, we'll say, response of nature to the wrong choices, oftentimes, of life around it. So, we have the opportunity to experience God all the time. All we have to do is expand our experiences of beauty. And that's completely doable by everybody. All people have that opportunity if they seek it out. And each person has that opportunity on an individual basis based upon what they can sense of beauty around them. Every person, except for the most evil of people, can experience beauty. And that tells you God exists. Because by definition, that is what tells us God exists. Isn't that wonderful? And you don't have to mentally think about it. You don't have to even meditate about it. It's right there. It's right in your experience. It's amazing. Now, if you haven't been experiencing that, you've been limiting yourself. And that usually comes from fears. People who don't allow themselves to experience beauty are afraid that they're going to experience something that's going to upset their, we'll call it, belief system other than in God. Most people who believe in God and have faith in God are not afraid of beauty. But people who have a lack of that also have trouble wanting to go ahead and try to experience beauty. They oftentimes avoid that experience at great cost. Now you can say, well, how, why would somebody be afraid of that? Well, because if you're egotistical, it upsets your sense of yourself and reality, and it forces you to focus out more than you want to, which threatens you. It threatens a weak self into wanting to be more selfish rather than to wanting to be more focused out and giving. Beauty causes us to want to give more. People that are shying away from beautiful experiences are very selfish. Now, I'm going to tell you some things that it's going to sound somewhat prejudiced, but I have to explain it this way to be able to expand on what I just told you. People who live in very harsh and terrible environments, such as some parts of some inner cities, some places that are just infested with crime and drugs, etc., almost always live in places that are very ugly. Why is that? Is that just coincidental? No. It's because those people have very weak selves. They're very, very selfish, caused by the drugs, by the crimes, by the, all the things that they do. It could be prostitution. It could be anything. And those things cause them to create environments that are ugly and to seek environments that are ugly to live in. It causes them to do that very thing. Now, does that mean that everybody who's a criminal lives in an ugly environment? No. No, I'm talking about on an average. It sounds prejudicial, but it's also true. Because some people try to fake the sense of beauty by making things that are accepted as beautiful things by other people to be part of their environment, but they oftentimes make their environment still ugly and by not really having something there that they find beautiful because they can't sense beauty. And so it still comes out that they're living in some kind of ugliness. Sometimes it's just, you know, some kind of over-lavish, very expensive, but not beautiful. We sometimes say in bad taste. Because they don't sense beauty, really. Those people may be very criminally minded, maybe quite dishonest and selfish. What I'm saying is that people who don't express, who don't seek beauty, are oftentimes at the same time not expressing or seeking anything about God. They're living very selfish and sometimes criminal and very negative kinds of lives. And this, there's a reason for it. It all fits together with what's good about God. It all fits together with rejecting what's good about God and living a life that is selfish. People who reject God will not be able to keep organization, will not seek a kind of peaceful environment in which to live. There's disorganization. There's a sense of disarray, which oftentimes relates to this question of beauty. Now, beauty sometimes is not always symmetrical. As a matter of fact, it can be very asymmetrical, but it still has a level of God's mind in it, which shows God in its way of organizing about what God's choices are. Total dishevelment, garbage in the streets, rusted out vehicles, trash everywhere, people not caring about anything. Those types of things are anti-God. They are anti-God. They're anti-good. They're ugly, which I call the opposite of beauty in some respects. And they express the inability for those people to sense beauty. They can't even sense it. And they're afraid to, in many respects, to change. They're afraid to change. So that's something else, another way that we can experience God. Another way that people oftentimes say, well, how can I really know there's a God? Well, it's pretty hard to know there's a God if you're living in the worst conditions, because that's a very anti-God kind of life. Okay, what's another example, another way that we might choose to find God? Well, one of the ways is to help the lower kingdoms, the kingdoms that are not part of humanity, to prosper while they also serve to build our own civilization. Not to, as some people say, let's go back to basics and all build huts and live in, you know, like we did thousands of years ago. No, that is not what I'm talking about. And that isn't how you necessarily save the lower kingdoms. What you do instead is you raise the consciousness of every all life that you can below human, and you also improve the environment while improving your own environment at the same time. Not as a sacrifice. You don't stop living on tens of thousands of acres because there's spotted owls. Instead, you allow the spotted owl to prosper and grow in an environment where you can still live together. And you say, oh, you can't really do that. No. The people who say that are, again, usually not understanding what God is about. And oftentimes they don't believe in God. Now, does that mean all environmentalists? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying people who want to restrict everyone else from living someplace because they think the only way to save the lower kingdoms from humanity is to make them prominent and force humanity out. That's not the way to do it. The way to do it is to integrate. The way to do it is to have all things prosper together, to work out systems of inclusiveness that helps everything to grow, and even if something has to adapt or change, sometimes that's what it's supposed to do. The idea that everything has to remain exactly as it is for the rest of its existence is anti-evolutionary. For all those people who claim to be the great conservationists, they're anti-evolutionary. They don't want there to be any change. Everything has to remain exactly as it was. We don't want to change anything. No. Things will constantly adapt and change, provided that we allow them to without killing them. and we make sure that their habitats are enriched beyond the way they were before. We have the capability of doing this. And as we do it, we find God. As we use, which is what I'm referring to right now, the third ray, we can actually find God by helping all forms of life to grow. We can, and we can live with those forms of life. We don't have to isolate ourselves or them. I know this is a great disagreement to some people, but that's the difference between what this show is about and maybe what they think. At any rate, and another factor that's inclusive to this is that we should improve our communications with all living things, including ourselves. Human beings tend to miscommunicate. Why do they miscommunicate? Well, they miscommunicate because they live in illusion. They're constantly getting information that is incorrect. And then they take the incorrect information and they compound it by either creating environments for things that can't control what we're doing, like anything from ants to spotted owls to whales, and making it intolerable to them, or we make it intolerable to our fellow human beings by miscommunicating to them so much bad information, so much misunderstood, completely lacking truth information, that we're more propagandizing the world than we are trying to improve truth. If truth is being created in our communication, and if the communication is given with the hope that others will become wiser, not just more intelligent in what we're giving them, then that makes absolute sense. But very small amounts of our actual communication on a daily basis does that. Most communication between human beings is lacking both in truth, in wisdom, and in love. Most communication between human beings is manipulative, destructive, it is misinforming, and it leads people away from God. And we are communicating with all life by the way that we use life or abuse life in our environment, getting back to the first part of this. That's a form of communication as well. But that communication is that humans are death, humans destroy environments, and we're destroying God, or the growth of God, in the process. Because God's growth is life itself and its growth. If we destroy the growth of life, we're destroying the growth of God. And the more we destroy the growth of God, the more we can see God. So you can see how this all fits together. If we are on a destructive path in our civilization, towards all the lower kingdoms and even ourselves, we will become more and more unable to see God. God will become invisible to us. God will cease to exist. And then we will be in huge, huge trouble. What about in terms of our politics? Now, you've heard me talk about this in prior shows. What are the politics of God? Well, the politics of God are that government is there as God should be, as a representative of God. Let me explain. God is there to help control things that we cannot control. Government is there to help control things that we cannot control on an individual level. But the problem is that government can be more destructive than constructive. So the best government is the government that is most limited and most controlled by the people that it is governing. The worst government is the opposite. And represents the least amount, if no part, of God at all. So a government that is overly controlling, that is controlling virtually everything, when it should be controlling almost nothing of individuals' right to control themselves, And the worst government is a government that is fighting or trying not to be controlled by people that it governs, and or forcing people, preventing people from having any control over it, which would be a complete dictatorship, a tyrannical one at that. So government, as was proposed by the founders of our country and put into action, is the closest government to God that probably has ever been invented, because it's government of and for the people. And it's government that is limited. If you don't think that the founders of our country wanted to limit the government, look at the size of the Constitution. Look at the writings of the Federalist Papers, and also the writings, especially of the Declaration of Independence, and how succinct are the statements that are made in all of those instruments. They're very succinct because they didn't want to have a very large government. They wanted to create a government that people should watch and be constantly vigilant in making sure that it doesn't try to get control over them. And they basically feared government, because government, by being a first-rate institution, is more likely to be destructive than constructive, unless it's severely limited. Why is that? Because the first ray is the closest ray to God. Government is a substitute for God in a very small sense, but a very dangerous substitute if it isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing. Then it becomes the most dangerous of all things. The most dangerous of all things because it affects all of life, and especially human life, and oftentimes goes to the dark side instead of trying to create more life and create life that it co-creates with its creator. It is atheistic. It is destructive. It declares itself to be God. If, in case you have forgotten, almost all of history is filled with people, kings, dictators, emperors, or parties who claim to be God, to have the rights of God. Whereas God gave all of its rights to human beings that human beings could possibly use. Those rights are inalienable and are part of the Declaration of Independence and part of our Constitution here in the United States. This is the best kind of government. I think it can be improved on considerably by getting rid of corruption. Corruption is not representing God and having the power of government. Anytime you mix those two together, you have vast corruption. The power of government could be held by vigilantes. It could be held by mafias. It could be held by illegal court systems. It could be held by you name it. But it's a power that only God should have, and that when abused is some of the worst things that can happen to human beings, because it literally destroys the ability to create. It takes that away. It takes away freedom. And it treats the individual as a collective mass that it is going to control and make into whatever it wants. Once you do that, you have taken away humanity. Humanity is based upon the rights of an individual to create itself into the highest and best it can. Whereas when you say, well, everybody's just this number of the whole mass collective, and we'll call them comrades, and they'll all do exactly what we say because we are the great government and we know what we're talking about. Those are the things we should fear. As you know from prior shows, also, economies, which is kind of going to the opposite end, are supportive of governments, and you can't have a free government if you don't have a free economy. There's no such thing. The two are like the bookends of the whole system of creating God and understanding that God is good. If you don't believe God is good, if you don't believe in God at all, then you don't want an economic system of freedom. You want to control it. And you use the government to control it. You use everything in your power that limits God, limits creation, limits freedom. It's all the things that we talked about tonight. All these things get limited and prevented. Let me move on to the last thing because we're running out of time. When we educate people, we need to educate people in ways in which they're not told, but they learn how to think. They're not told what to think or what to know. They're taught how to think and how to learn and how to find out the truth. Our schools at the present time are almost the exact opposite of that process. Why is that the case? Why is God then, therefore, missing so much from school? Well, it's the same idea. If you remove freedom, if you remove freedom of thought, which is choice with direction, and you tell everybody they have to learn the same thing, and it's a bunch of memorizing of probably very mistaken knowledge, oftentimes corrupted by the desires and needs of the people teaching it, then in those situations, God's gone. No God will be represented within the structure of schools that function within that way, which is most of the schools of today, and especially public schools. What? Where did this come from? Because government entered into the prospect of how education should be done. You don't want government involved in education because government, when the government goes sour, so does the education. Very, very dangerous sorts of things happen when that takes place. Be aware, a year ago, the present administration in the United States took over all student loans. Why would they do such a thing? Banks are doing okay with it. Why would they take over the student loans? So they can control the higher education. Be extremely careful. That's one of the most dangerous things to happen. Why do people want control over what textbooks are used? Well, because most of them are corrupted. They're corrupted by philosophies that involve getting rid of God. You already know that. You just didn't understand the connection, maybe, between how you understand and see God and why God is being removed from education so that untruths can be implanted, especially into young people who are vulnerable, because they don't have as much control as adults do. They don't have as many choices. If we make all the choices for them in our educational system, and those choices are corrupted by the needs of tyrants and people in power and control and need to achieve an agenda, we turn those people into automatons. They become less than human, and they go against the goodness of God. Nothing can be more sad, in my opinion, than an educational system that has no understanding of what God is. That's an educational system that will build future generations of people who are going to be enslaved and who will never be able to adequately understand what God is or that God is good. I don't believe they'll get out of it through churches or faith alone. If you continually brainwash them with education, which is wrong, the results will be disastrous. So this is something we need to be concerned about whenever we're talking about how you find God. Finding God in education, by the way, is not about teaching religion. It's about teaching thinking. Free thinking, free choices, helping people to become more creative in the learning process So they create their own understandings, not they're told this is what you need to know and that's it. People who have the right, if not even the obligation, to disagree with their own teachers and the textbooks they may use, etc. A variety of viewpoints should be presented, with people being open to discussing and even disagreeing with what the teacher or teachers think at that particular time. This is an excellent system, one in which we don't have much going in our public schools. I warn all of you to be extremely careful and watch what's happening in that part of our world. Anyway, we're out of time for right now. I hope that this has told you what's good about God. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.